Hello, Dog Nation, and welcome to the Dog Nation preseason. I'm Kelly Mansell with my wonderful host, Connor Riley. And this is the show where anything goes. Connor, it's the Thursday before St. Patrick's Day. Do you have any big plans for this weekend?
Yeah, the NCAA tournament bracket is revealed on Sunday. That is what I will be focused on. Looking forward to that. Going to have a nice meal of like actual food. Watch the bracket come out. Go ahead. Get my selections ready to go. I don't know why anyone would do anything else on this Sunday. The most important holiday this weekend, Selection Sunday. Very excited for it as March Madness is here.
I'm going to have you hold that thought, and we're going to come back to that at the end since we have 40 minutes where we have to get along with each other, and I really want us to start on a good note because we do have so much to cover today. So here's what we're going to do today. On the Dog Nation preseason, with spring practice starting on Tuesday, we got a first look at UGA's 2024 team. So we're going to find out what Kirby Smart had to say about spring practice this far and take a look at the updated injury list, because we know with spring practice there is injuries announced. Then we're going to continue doing our spring position preview. Today we're going to talk about two strong groups, the linebackers and the defensive backs. Then we're going to touch on Pro Day that happened yesterday. 13 dogs, 32 NFL teams. What did that look like and who stood out? Then we've got coaches everywhere candidly speaking about NIL. So what did Kirby Smart have to say about that? How do the players feel about that? And how does Connor feel about that? We know that he's going to let us know. And then we're going to wrap up with our topic of the day, and that is why St. Patrick's Day is the single greatest drinking holiday ever. But more on that later. Let's go ahead and start with spring practice. Now, Connor, I want to come to you because over the next few weeks on Tuesdays and Thursdays, there will be spring practice. But in your mind, what really is the purpose of spring practice? Is it to get guys back in shape, or do position battles begin here?
I don't know how much position battles really begin here. I think, and this is a big reason why Kirby Smart likes it so much, it's a time to teach. It's a time to experiment. It's a time to move guys around and sort of figure out what you have at different spots. The coaching staff loves this time of year. It's something where, you know, you get to see, okay, maybe this player can do this for us this year. Maybe we know going into the season, hey, these are some of the areas that are going to be strengths and weaknesses for us. It's time for guys to get better. I think anytime you have an opportunity to put the pads on, you have a chance to go out there and show what you can do. And in the past, we've seen guys have big springs and use that to propel into the fall season. You think Brock Bowers, when he first showed up in spring of 2021, he was making big plays instantly. That proved to carry on into the season. There are going to be guys that do similar things. You think last year with Carson Beck, had a very strong spring, and in turn, he goes on to be Georgia's starting quarterback and lead them to a 12-0 regular season. So, you know, the position battles, that's all I think going to get more sorted out in the fall, specifically at the cornerback and safety positions. But it gives Georgia a good idea of what they have right now and where the strengths and weaknesses of this team might be.
So even though the media did not have access to spring practice on Tuesday, we did get to see Kirby Smart at the podium for the first time, along with some other players. And when asked about spring practice, this is what Kirby Smart had to say.
Yeah, we've got a long way to go. So we'll get to work on that today. And, you know, it's just step by step, day by day. Don't put one foot too far ahead of the other.
We've got a long way to go. Some things never change, and that seems to be how Kirby Smart responds to these types of questions. I don't think that throughout the season we're going to get anything more from him, do you?
No, he was never going to come out there and say, you know what, I think we got a national championship winning squad on our team right here. So, you know, it's a long game, and he's absolutely right. You know, there were no pads on. Those won't come on until next week. It's certainly something to watch and monitor as Georgia makes its way through spring practice. I think Kirby touched on this on Tuesday. He doesn't know what the identity of this team is yet, but I think that's something that can be formed in the spring, or at least give you a good idea of what this identity might be. You knew coming out of spring in 2021 that Georgia was going to have a great defensive front. You knew in 2022 that, hey, this passing game had a chance to be pretty potent with Stetson Bennett coming back and some of the wide receivers, and obviously Brock Bowers they had there. So it's going to be really interesting in sort of seeing going into the 2024 season what sort of happens over the next month and what identity this team chooses to develop.
Even though Kirby Smart is not always the best at answering questions, one question that we did get answered upon Tuesday was the updated spring injury report. Some players who will be out for the entire spring, some of them being limited. So let's go ahead and take a look at all the players that we know will not be participating in spring practice. There you have it. Running back Branson Robinson, ruptured patella tendon, got hurt last season. Connor, the timeline of all this, when can we really expect to see him back?
The hope for him, for Branson, is that he's going to be able to go at the start of fall camp. But I think this is an injury similar to, say, an ACL, where it's going to take 2 full years after the injury to really get him back to where he might have been prior to that injury. You might see him a little bit this season, but I think with Georgia having Trevor Etienne and leaning on guys like Roderick Robinson and Andrew Paul, they're not expecting a whole lot from Branson Robinson because of the significance of this injury. It's not just an ACL. It's actually a good bit worse than that. And so I think Georgia knows that it's best to be cautious and play the long game with Branson Robinson as he goes and tries to recover from this injury. They're not going to, in my opinion, put too much on him. And so any steps that are made this spring are going to be small ones.
Now, if we go back to that list, we'll also see that Bo Hewley is out with a shoulder injury. Tyrion Ingram-Dawkins out with a foot injury. And another injury that we see on that list is linebacker Smile Mundon, somebody who's coming back to be a leader on this defense. But it also opens the door for guys like C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson to show what they're capable of in spring practice. Is the Smile injury something that we should be genuinely concerned about?
No, I don't think so. I think this is a surgery that he had after the season. He was very banged up last year, picked up this foot injury at the end of spring practice, really gutted through it all season. And you could tell he wasn't himself last season. And so him not practicing this spring, quite frankly, I think is a good thing for him to get healthy and be 100%, because I think we saw at the end of the 2022 season, when he's healthy, he is an absolute difference maker in that front seven for Georgia. And that inside linebacker position is so stacked, not just with guys like C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson. Jalen Walker is a guy Georgia's going to be interested in getting more snaps at that position. And then you bring in three really talented freshmen, you know, Chris Cole, a five-star prospect, Justin Williams, the highest-ranked linebacker that Glenn Schumann has ever signed at Georgia. There's a lot to like in this inside linebacker room. And with a guy like Smile Mundon, who's played a ton of snaps, you know what you're going to get out of him. The biggest thing is making sure that he's 100% healthy for that first game against Clemson. So I actually think for Georgia, him getting healthy this spring is far more important than anything he might bring to the field or that we see on G-Day.
So those are the players that we can count on not seeing the spring or at G-Day, but there were also a list of limited players that were released that we could potentially see on G-Day. But as Connor mentioned, it's definitely in their best interest to take a step back. We'd rather have them for the season than getting to see a glimpse of them for the spring. So let's go ahead and take a look at the limited players for this season. We'll have Christian Miller. He's limited with a meniscus injury. You've got Ra-Ra Thomas, who is struggling with a foot injury. Safety Malachi Starks, I think that was one that people were surprised to see. He's out with a shoulder injury. Then you've got Chris Jones and Demelo Jones there at the bottom. Connor, I know they're limited. I know that there's a chance that we might get to see them, but is there anybody being out on this list that potentially worries you?
Christian Miller is a guy that I think needs to have a big spring for Georgia. I would lump Jordan Hall in there as well. If Georgia's going to have defensive difference makers on that defensive line, I think it's going to be a guy like a Christian Miller. And this spring, I think, would have been a big opportunity for him to go out there and show what he could do. He didn't play in the Orange Bowl. This was an injury that was picked up pre-bowl practice there. So I'm really interested in seeing how much he's able to do this spring and what he can do, because I know on the defensive line, they're counting on him. I know Terrence Edwards spoke really highly of Ra-Ra Thomas. He's a guy that made plays at times last season. From my understanding, his foot was really messed up at the end of last season. That's why he didn't play in the game against Alabama or in the Orange Bowl against Florida State. So I think getting him healthy in a wide receiver room that has a lot of question marks in my mind, with Ladd McConkey moving on, Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint as well, I'm really interested in seeing what Ra-Ra Thomas ultimately looks like, especially just given a season ago, he could not have had a worse spring practice for Georgia. And so as he gets onto the field in any way, shape, or form this spring, I think that's going to be something to watch in this Georgia wide receiver room, because I know there are people in the program that very much believe in the talent that Thomas has.
In addition to that, Ra-Ra Thomas is somebody, when I asked you during our wide receiver position preview, I asked, other than Dylan Bell, who's the wide receiver that needs to step up the most? And you said it was Ra-Ra Thomas. He's somebody that we only got a glimpse of what he could do last season, but still has so much left to prove. If he does get the chance to hit the field this spring, what are the most important things that we need to see out of him?
Yeah, I think that the chemistry that develops between him and Carson Beck, because, again, he had a disastrous spring a season ago, and it seemed like they were playing catch-up during the season there. And so with him out, you know, he's a guy that, with Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint moving on, is expected to move into that sort of big-bodied X receiver on the outside. And so if he's not able to go – you're really putting a lot on the plate of Colby Young, who just got here from Miami, who has similar size and did well at Miami a season ago. But as Thomas showed a season ago, you know, it can be very tough making an adjustment to the Georgia football program. So if Thomas is able to go this spring, I think that's going to answer some of the questions that Georgia have in terms of who's that physical outside playmaker. You think of a guy like George Pickens when he was healthy at Georgia, how vital that was for the offense. Marcus Rosemead, Jack Sane, obviously a season ago, even A.D. Mitchell at times when he was able to play for the Bulldogs. Having that talented X receiver goes a long way in opening up this offense, and Thomas could very well be that guy this coming season.
Now, someone that we didn't put on this list, but I feel like it is important to mention, is that on Tuesday it was announced that tight end Pierce Sperling was going to medically retire from the game, and we really do wish him all the best. But with Pierce being gone, who does that open up that tight end room for? Because when Georgia brought in Ben Yurcek from Stanford, I think there was a lot of question marks around that, but we know that Kirby doesn't do anything without intention. So with Pierce medically retiring, does that open up the door for anybody in particular in the tight end room?
Yeah, one, you just absolutely hate it for Pierce. This is something that he's had, you know, knowing that he has had a heart condition for a while and then ultimately getting medically disqualified. You absolutely hate it for him. I think you hear the way that he has talked and others have talked about the chance that he had to play just one college football season, how much that meant to him, especially at a place like Georgia where his family has very deep ties to the program. He was the first player to commit in that 2023 recruiting cycle. You wish nothing but the best for Pearson. It is cool that he's at least going to be able to be around the team, still be on scholarship moving forward. My understanding is that the Ben Yurcek move was made well in advance, or knowing that this was going to be something that Sperling was dealing with in terms of the ultimate medical disqualification there. So I think he's someone, when he comes in the summer, is absolutely going to be a bigger target. But this really puts a lot on the plate of Lawson Lucky, because Georgia knows what it has in Oscar Delp. He's going to be the physical blocker this year at that tight end position. What is Lawson Lucky able to carve out this spring, and what role is he able to do? Because I do think he's a little bit more maybe that Brock Bowers pass catcher type role, rather than that big bodied, you know, blocking type tight end that I think Washington was, or Sperling would have ultimately hoped to have been there. I think one other guy that I'm interested in watching and seeing how he develops this spring is freshman Jane Riddell. And you don't want to put too much of a guy who, you know, 6 months ago was playing high school football in Missouri, but he really stood out at those bowl practices down in the Orange Bowl there. This guy is a unique blend of size and speed. I think similar in an Oscar Delp way, sort of a combination of that Darnell Washington and Brock Bowers type. And what Georgia's able to get out of him this spring and how quickly he's able to pick things up is something that I'm going to be following, because this guy, I think, can be a really, really talented option in this Georgia offense if he's able to develop and get up to speed in the college game.
So after we finish taping this, you're going to head to spring practice. What are going to be the things that you're keeping an eye on most?
Yeah, I think this first practice is just getting everybody in terms of who their new numbers are, players, you know, obviously 28 newcomers to this Georgia team, 22 early enrollees, 6 transfers, with Ben Yurcek being the only one not there. Just sort of seeing how they're integrating, what's being said there. You also have 4 new position coaches. What does it look like with Tavarius Robinson leading the secondary? Obviously, Dante Williams coming over for USC to lead the cornerback room there. I think those are the sort of things, just the new faces, getting pictures of them, seeing what their jersey number is and who's doing what, I think is the big thing. And by the time this ultimately airs, you can check all that out. I'll have that in the story for you. It's on DawgNation.com right now. So if you want to know what number KJ Bolden is wearing, number 4, or Ellis Robinson, number 1, and anybody else out there, go ahead and check that out, because I do think it's going to be well worth your time.
Yeah, as spring practice kicks into full gear, we will continue to make updates as much as we possibly can each week on the Dog Nation preseason. And as Connor mentioned, you can check out all the articles that they have put up on DogNation.com, as well as tons and tons of YouTube videos that you can check out from spring practice. And with that, we will move on to our spring position preview. 2 very, very strong groups today. We've saved the best for last, so let's go ahead and start with the linebacker room. You see there, Smile Mundon, mentioned earlier in the show, he is out for spring with a foot injury, but then it opens up the door for guys like C.J. Allen, Raylan Wilson, Jalen Walker. I mean, let's start with C.J. Allen. He was our Dog Nation Oscars newcomer of the year, a massive achievement for CJ Allen. Whether he knows it or not, he played in all 14 games last season, made 5 starts. I feel like this time next year, we're going to be talking about him in the same way that we talk about a guy like Malachi Starks.
Yeah, CJ Allen, heavy is the head that wears the crown. He's made a jersey number change. He is wearing number three. Kaylee, do you know who the last inside linebacker at Georgia was to wear the number three jersey?
Was it Roquan Smith?
It was Roquan Smith. Those are big shoes to be stepping into. And I think he knows and understands that. Look, there was a lot of hype coming out of high school about Raylan Wilson, about Troy Bowles. But CJ Allen really took the bull by the horns that freshman season. And when Jamon Dumas Johnson went down with an injury, stepped in there. And be it whoever you talk to, whether it's people in the program or guys like Jeff Sintel who covered his recruitment, they see CJ Allen as a special, special player. And so I'm really interested in seeing not just the spring, but into the season, what CJ Allen is ultimately doing, how he's able to make improvements. He is more in that traditional mold of, the N'Kobe Dean type linebacker, not the super athletic freak that, say, a Quay Walker is or a Smile Mundon is, but a guy who's going to be able to identify all the reads, call the defense, and he has plenty of athleticism to make the plays. This guy was a standout running back in high school as well. So I know Georgia feels very, very good about what they have in CJ Allen.
So last year when Jamon Dumas Johnson got hurt, that's when we really saw the emergence of Raylan Wilson. Seeing CJ Allen and Raylan Wilson there on the field together almost felt like a fever dream. Are we going to see a lot more of him this season?
Certainly in the spring, and I do think he's going to carve out a role. Georgia has always rotated at that inside linebacker position. He played a good bit in that SEC championship game, had a tough moment where he was responsible for giving up a touchdown there. But he's a guy who's got all the athletic traits, just an absolute monster. Ben clocked at over 24 miles per hour in GPS, ran a sub-11 100-meter yard dash at the, or excuse me, 100-meter dash in high school. This is a guy that has rare, rare athleticism and is a guy that, as he continues to play more linebacker, and he's going to get a ton of opportunities to do so, I think can really emerge as a player for Georgia and give them a nice athletic option behind Smile Mundon as well, so that they're not super reliant like they were on him, I think, a season ago.
And let's talk about Jaylen Walker, a junior, somebody who I felt like whose name we maybe don't talk about enough just because there are so many big names within that linebacker room. He's somebody that we're going to see a lot of in the rotation. What are you hoping to see out of him during the course of spring practice?
Yeah, well, speak for yourself. I think Jaylen Walker is one of, if not the most talented players on this defense. I think he was one of the best defenders on Georgia's team last season. Led the Bulldogs in sacks. He's clearly a talented edge rusher. As Walker, Schumann, and Kirby Smart have said before, they view his long-term future at inside linebacker. The reality is there are just not a lot of 6'2", 245-pound edge rushers in the NFL these days. And so that's why they ultimately want to move him to that inside linebacker role. And he got a chance to do that late last season. And I think when you've watched him play that inside linebacker position, you do see him thinking a little bit more. I don't necessarily believe that the game has totally slowed down for him at that position, whereas when he's been an edge rusher, especially as a pass rusher, you can see just the athleticism that he moves with and the way he's able to get after quarterbacks. I think this spring, with Smile Mundon out, the chance for him to learn, with Georgia not needing to play him at that pass rushing position and can really focusing on getting him better as an inside linebacker, is huge for Jaylen Walker, because if he's going to be a guy that makes an impact on all three downs as opposed to just on third down right now, he's going to have to do so as an inside linebacker.
So if you had to grade this position group right now, what would you grade them, and where do they need to be at the end of the season for in order for Georgia to potentially win another national championship?
I'd give them an A plus. Now, I would point out, I'd probably give them an A plus a season ago, going into spring with Smile Mundon coming back, Jamon Dumas Johnson, and the freshman that they have. And quite frankly, and injuries I think played a big part in this, losing Jamon Dumas Johnson and then Smile Mundon being limited with a foot injury all season. They did not play up to an A level, and I think that showed up in that Alabama game where they had some issues containing Jalen Milroe from making plays there. Look, Georgia's best teams have always had great linebacker play. You think about Roquan Smith and the role he had on that 2017 national championship team, N'Kobe Dean winning the Buskus Award in 2021, and then having great players like Quay Walker and Channing Tindall at that position as well. Georgia's going to win a national championship. Odds are their best players on defense are going to come at that inside linebacker position. And I do think that they have the talent. And in this case, this year, something they didn't have a season ago, the depth and experience behind those top line guys to really make an impact there. It has to be an A for Georgia. It wasn't a season ago, even though I think it very well should have been.
So if you're going to give them that high of a grade, do you consider them to be UGA's strongest defensive position group?
Easily. I think defensive line has a fair amount of questions. While I think the secondary will get there, right now with replacing guys like Kamari Lassiter and Javon Bullard, multi-year starters, I think this is far and away the most talented position group, not just on the defensive side of the ball for Georgia, but on the entire team.
So let's move on to the other position group. This category is wide open because This is another one that I feel like brings back a lot of guys, also has more depth, but still has some holes to fill. So let's go ahead and look at all of our DBs. We've got two slides. I couldn't fit them all because there were so many. We've got Julian Humphrey, Malachi Starks, Dan Jackson, Dalen Everett, Janelle Aguero. I mean, we could probably spend an entire series just going one by one, talking about their achievements. And then you have guys that will fit into the rotation here, including some younger guys like Ellis Robinson IV, KJ Bolden, guys who I know Dog Nation is stoked to see out on the field. And then you bring in the transfer safety from Alabama, Jake Pope. Let's go back to that first slide with the guaranteed names. Let's talk about Malachi Starks, because even though he is going to be limited this spring with an injury, it's clear that he is the quarterback of this group. He's going to have to be the leader, two-year starter, All-American. Malachi Starks is going to have to be the guy. How does he get better when he is already playing his best ball?
Yeah, this is a guy who, not just the best player on this Georgia defense, I think might be the best defensive player in the country for not just Georgia, might be bar none the best defensive player in the country for this upcoming season. You've seen the range, the ability to make tackles in the alley, the interceptions that he has. He can do it all from the safety position. The big thing for him is getting and staying healthy through this season, obviously dealing with a little bit of a shoulder injury, getting that cleaned up. We'll see how much he goes this spring. There's not a whole lot Malachi Starks needs to do this spring and in this offseason. If he's out there, if he's 100%, this Georgia team is obviously better. It's going to be very difficult for teams to throw on Malachi Starks. And look, Georgia's had a lot of great safeties under Kirby Smart. You think J.R. Reed, Lewis Seen, Chris Smith. I think by the time Starks' career wraps up at the end of this season, because I do expect him to be a first-round pick in next year's NFL draft, I think we'll be talking about Malachi Starks as potentially one of the all-time great safeties to have played at Georgia, including even better than his head coach, Kirby Smart, who had 16 career interceptions.
And Julian Humphrey broke news right before the Orange Bowl when he said that he was going to hit the transfer portal and ultimately decided to stay. How much better is this defense with Julian Humphrey deciding to return?
Yeah, it definitely helps. He's a guy that Georgia felt very good about last season. I think you saw what he was able to do in the Missouri game and how he might have been able to help the team. Unfortunately, injures his collarbone in that game against Ole Miss that knocked him out for really the rest of the season there. Look, that cornerback position has a lot of talent. And yes, it's unproven and it's a little bit on the younger side. But between him, Daniel Harris, who this coaching staff loves and is just one of the most rocked up cornerbacks prospects that Georgia has had in their time here, not to mention Ellis Robinson, the five-star freshman, number one overall cornerback in the country, a rare prospect even for a program like Georgia. They are absolutely loaded at this cornerback position. And while, yes, it is a little inexperienced, I think the Georgia coaching staff feels very, very good about what they have there, whether or not Julian Humphrey was back or not.
As you mentioned, guys like Ellis Robinson IV, a name who all of Dog Nation knows, I think collectively that might be the 2023 guy that most Dog Nation fans are excited to see get there on the field. But also then you had that big flip with KJ Bolden. But then you also have the sophomores that we didn't get the chance to see a lot last season, guys like Janelle Aguero. Who are you most excited to see get into that rotation potentially?
For me, it's Janelle Aguero. I think this is a guy who can come out and lock down that starting star spot for Georgia, replacing Tyke Smith. A guy that impressed early on last season, but ultimately picks up an injury during that preseason camp period. And if we've seen anything, if you pick up an injury in August, especially if you're a young player, it's just really hard to make up the ground during the course of the season when game plans are being installed and matchup specifics are being finalized. It's tough to really crack into the lineup that way. I think one of the things you're looking for Georgia this year, coming out of spring practice, we talked about position battles earlier. I think if you're Georgia and you want to feel good about this defense in the secondary, you leave spring practice knowing, hey, Janelle Aguero is going to be a starter for us. He has to ultimately go out there and earn it and do it. But whether it be at that safety position or more likely at the star position, I think this is a guy that, you know, was a top 50 recruit coming in, didn't necessarily get a chance to show it a whole lot a season ago because of how well Tyke Smith played. But I think Janelle Aguero is going to turn a lot of heads this spring, and that's only going to help Georgia come this fall.
This is a position group that is collectively so stacked, has so much depth. You have so many options, but no group can be perfect. What are the biggest questions that need to be answered about the DBs before the season starts?
It's just the lack of experience. Obviously, Malachi Starks, a two-year starter. Dalen Everett had started every game last year for Georgia. It wasn't always perfect, but that tends to happen when you play on an island, especially opposite Kamari Lassiter there. Look, Georgia's going to be tested a lot in that first half of the season. Clemson on a neutral site, at Kentucky, at Alabama. at Texas all before the bye. They're young in the secondary, and while, yes, we've just spoken about how talented they are, they're going to have to grow up really quickly, especially, I think, by the time that Texas game rolls around, mm-hmm. with Quinn Ewers coming back, going on the road there. They bring in Isaiah Bond out of the transfer portal. They have a lot of talent at that wide receiver position. You saw Alabama struggle with that a season ago when they had two guys in Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold who might ultimately go in the first round, not to mention Caleb Downs in that secondary as well. Mm-hmm. This is an inexperienced secondary. It's on the younger side. Other than Malachi Starks, you don't really feel necessarily all that great. You don't have, other than maybe Dan Jackson and Starks, are guys that have played a ton of winning football at a high level. And so it's going to be very important for this group, which is very talented, I would point out, to get up to speed quickly and understand the difference between, you know, being a part-time player and being a big-time player playing in big-time games for Georgia this fall.
All right, so Connor's class is in session. What are you grading them?
I'm giving them a B right now, and it's only because they have so much incomplete work. It would not surprise me in the slightest if by the end of this season, this group is playing at an A level. They certainly have the potential to do so, but they just have to ultimately go out there and live up to it. It's like the teacher in the, that goes up and says, you know, Kaylee is very smart. She just doesn't always go out there and show it and do all the little things. I think this position group has to go out there and do the little things well, make all the right smart mental plays, because Lord knows they have all the potential in the world and can be a difference maker, I think, for Georgia in 2024.
That sentence did sound kind of familiar to me. It was usually, she's a very bright young lady. She just talks too much. And you know what? I'd like to think that foreshadows a lot of what I do now.
Yeah, you were just practicing and preparing for your future career role, and I'm sorry your teachers didn't understand that growing up.
Hey, they just had no idea that greatness was upon them, but because they keep up with my mom's Facebook, they certainly know now.
There you go.
All right, and with that, that will wrap up our spring position preview. The last one this far. If you've missed any of our other position previews, you can check them out on our Dog Nation YouTube page. We'll have them posted every single day, or check out our shorts on the Dog Nation Instagram. That way you can get the most important things from our position preview. And now let's move on to Pro Day. Pro Day happened yesterday. Connor and I have been keeping up with all of the coverage, whether it was Senior Bowl, Combine, or where we're at now here with Pro Day. 13 dogs, 32 NFL teams, but it did take Dog Nation by storm when it was announced that Amarius Mims and Brock Bowers were not going to participate due to hamstring injuries. Connor, based on what you saw yesterday, who was the single standout from UGA's Pro Day?
Yeah, I think you look at a guy like Ladd McConkey. I know there was a lot of chatter about his three-cone drill and what he potentially ran, but he looked very smooth, very crisp running routes. I would note it is not a quote-unquote fast track in the UGA indoor practice facility. It's a little bit of a thicker turf there, and so that might lead to some slower times there. But you saw a lot of teams there, three NFL head coaches, Mike Tomlin of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who makes it a point to always be at this event. His daughter attends the University of Georgia. You have Brian Callahan of the Tennessee Titans. You have Antonio Pierce of the Las Vegas Raiders. I think this is a very good day for the Georgia program, even though you don't have guys like Brock Bowers and Amarius Mims ultimately working out. The reality is, like, those guys don't really need to work out at this point. They've shown everything they can show. They're still, I believe, going to be first-round picks and have the potential to be and very much impress teams moving forward. So ultimately, it was another big day for Georgia where you have all these NFL decision-makers and talent evaluators on hand, seeing another great group of Georgia Bulldogs who are likely headed to the NFL.
I think another thing that people were really excited about when it came to Pro Day was being able to see Gunnar Stockton get out there, being able to throw the ball to those receivers. How big of a look was it to be able to see him in that setting, and for NFL coaches to really be able to get their first look at Gunnar Stockton?
Yeah, we learned a lot about Gunnar yesterday. You think back to when Carson Beck had a chance to throw to George Pickens prior to the 2022 NFL draft. I think that gave Carson a lot of confidence. And I think similarly yesterday, you know, getting a chance to play with Ladd McConkey, a guy he's played with a lot, obviously two North Georgia guys, two of your favorites up there in that part of the state. I think, you know, that chemistry, that connection certainly helped both those guys. And again, just getting a chance to throw in front of NFL talent, the decision makers, I think is significant for Gunnar. Look, he's a guy that Georgia is counting on. He's going to be the backup quarterback this season. And while if everything goes to plan, that means he doesn't see a significant snap played for Georgia this season. Having a guy like Gunnar get these reps and having to throw in a pressurized situation, because that's what this is with NFL people on hand and watching, I think is another positive experience and growing moment for Gunner moving forward.
So based on what you saw yesterday, who is the steal of a draft from the Dogs?
You know, I think a guy that has continued to impress teams, I know Mike Griffith has talked about this a lot, is Tyke Smith. This was a guy who, you know, quite frankly, we talked about Janelle Aguero earlier. It was a guy this time a year ago, you know, I didn't even necessarily know if Tyke Smith was going to start. But then he goes out and runs a sub 4.5 40, I believe a 4.46, and played really well at the Senior Bowl, made a ton of plays for Georgia last season. This was a guy who, I'll be quite honest, as someone who thinks and talks about the NFL draft a lot, I didn't necessarily see as an NFL draft pick. And now, you know, he's pushing to go early on day three as a guy that can do a lot of different things, play either in that star nickel cornerback role or potentially be a safety there as well. So this is a guy who has absolutely made the most out of this last year, impressed at the combine, did so once again yesterday, and is a guy that, you know, again, as I said a moment ago, wasn't necessarily sure if he was going to be drafted. I feel very confident that we're going to hear his name called during the 2024 NFL draft.
While Pro Day is so exciting, I do think that it is a bittersweet moment because it is basically the team's like final goodbye to these guys. And last time maybe seeing that with that official Georgia G on. And I feel like this group in particular is so special because you have guys like SVP and Ladd McConkey who were there for the peak of Georgia, or hopefully just the beginning of the peak, but we know what they accomplished. So to see them one last time in that Georgia G, it was a bittersweet feeling.
Wow, Kaylee's already predicting the downfall of Georgia.
No, that is not what I meant. You know, like, they're going to look back on that, and it's going to be the good times, you know?
The good times are over. Wow, you know, Kaylee just really sunsetting this here. You know, I think Georgia can very well continue to win national championships. They've had to replace great players before. You know, you see N'Kobe Dean move on. You see Quay Walker move on. Five first rounders on the 2021 Georgia team go in the first round. And then they turn around and win the national championship again. So, yes, you know, and you hear those guys talk about the teammates and the camaraderie that they're going to miss playing with these guys, practicing, working out with these guys for the last time. While Kaylee maybe perhaps feels differently and that Georgia's on the backside of the mountain, I feel very comfortable saying Georgia's going to continue to win national championships with guys moving forward like Oscar Delp taking this role maybe next year or 2 years after that. You think future offensive lineman Monroe Freeling, potentially a guy who could be the next Demaryius Mims there. With Georgia, look, they've won a lot. They've climbed the mountain already. There are other mountains for them to summit, and they're going to keep doing that moving forward.
All right, so before I say something I regret, we're going to go ahead and move on to, you know, Connor's 2024 resolution was to be generally nicer this year, and I'm always trying to learn things from my coworkers and take away wisdom from them. And so with that, I will use some of this wisdom that Connor has shared with me, and we will move on to our next topic. Nick Saban had a lot to say this week about NIL. We saw him next to Ted Cruz, which to me was almost as crazy as seeing him next to Mickey Mouse and Jim Harbaugh. I would put those right there. Yeah, right there together. But he's being very candid about how he feels regarding NIL. So let's go ahead and hear what Nick Saban had to say about NIL this week.
All the things that I believed in for all these years, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. So it's always about developing players. It was always about helping people be more successful in life. My wife even said to me, we'd have all the recruits over on Sunday with their parents for breakfast, and she would always meet with the mothers and talk about how she was going to help and impact their sons and how they would be well taken care of. And she came to me, you know, like right before I retired and said, why are we doing this? And I said, what do you mean? She said, all they care about is how much you're going to pay them.
Okay, so I have a lot of thoughts on this, and I'm going to do my best to organize them in my head and go one by one. So let's start with this. I don't completely disagree with what he's saying. I understand his point. He saw that transition from the intentions of student athletes and their priorities when deciding where they wanted to go to college. What I don't understand is the intention of why he's coming out and saying this now, because at the end of the day, what can you realistically do about it? You are more than welcome to put your opinion out there, but can you already change what's already been done? And second of all, if he's going to have this spotlight and the spot on College game day, is this the best move for Nick Saban to be speaking out against this publicly? I need to hear your opinion, Connor, because I understand, but I don't at the same time.
So I think it's important to recognize, how did Nick Saban build Alabama into the way that he built it?
Everybody's been doing NIL for a while now, so I'm not going to say that he built it from the ground up, because there's always been people with the money bag. It's just now it's legal in a sense.
But more specifically, Alabama recruited at an elite level before everyone else sort of realized, wait, we should recruit at an elite level every single year. And you've seen Georgia do the same thing, which is why I think you heard Kirby Smart on Wednesday sort of vent a similar viewpoint and frustration there. I don't believe that Nick Saban thinks that NIL is bad for players. I don't think that he has a problem with players making money in that sense. It has undoubtedly, as I think he has outlined, made it harder to get the attention of high school recruits without talking NIL, without talking how much they're going to make. And look, you know, you can pitch development, you can pitch NFL draft. I understand that. I think at the same point in time, look, you have to have a plan for these guys in terms of NIL and what they're going to make. They're absolutely, you know, when you go to a job interview, when you were interviewing here at Dog Nation, you're like, yeah, at one point you were thinking, yeah, this is great for my development. It's a job. But also to act like, yeah, money wasn't a factor. Like, I think that's completely naive from these coaches. And the bigger issue that I think I have, you know, going to Congress, look, and this is not a political statement. If you think this Congress or any Congress of late or any Congress moving forward is going to fix issues in this country, much less one on a smaller scale, in my opinion, like name, image, and likeness, you're just, in my opinion, delusional. That is not going to happen. I think Nick Saban needs to take a stronger vocal stance, and Kirby Smart can include himself in this conversation as well, other college football coaches. They all have to come together and sacrifice and take things off the table for themselves and say, hey, you know what? This might hurt Alabama a little bit. This might hurt Georgia. This might hurt Michigan. This might hurt these other elite programs. We need to take off the table and come together and, you know, for the collective good of the sport, which Nick Saban seems to be advocating for, Kirby Smart seems to be advocating for, and say, hey, we need, as college football leaders, not go to Congress, not go to outside influences, be leaders in your own sport and make and come up with decisions and rules at a conference-wide and a collective-wide level to put guidelines and regulations into NIL, because that is absolutely a part of this. And when you factor in the transfer portal as well, coming into prominence at the same time, college football was very clearly not able to handle any of this, and it has continued to spiral. And that is why you see Nick Saban speaking in front of Congress, sitting next to Ted Cruz, talking about the issues of NIL, which in my opinion have been self-inflicted, because for so long the leaders at the college level, not just the NCAA, but these coaches as well, have put off making any real guardrails into this system.
And one thing that he said that we didn't get to see in the clip is he said he almost viewed it as like a caste system where the rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer. But the way I see it, Alabama would have fallen on that scale of the rich getting richer. Schools like Georgia, Ohio State, USC, schools that have the big money and already have established programs are part of that rich category that we're only going to continue to get more rich. Do you agree with what he said in regards to that?
Yeah, one of the great lies of college football is that every team has a chance to win the national championship. And the reality is, even in a 4-team playoff, and this is still, in my opinion, going to be true in a 12-team playoff, there are maybe 11, 12 teams each year that have a chance of winning a national title. And so much of that extends beyond just players and the ability to acquire them. You can look at Florida State a season ago. They go undefeated. They do everything they can in the regular season. They beat every team in front of them. And they still can't win a national championship. NIL didn't create this caste system. College football has always been this way. There's always been a cap on the teams that can actually go out there and win a national championship. And before you point out TCU and them getting to a national championship and saying, hey, this can happen to anyone, what happened in that national championship game? They got obliterated 65-7 because they ran into a team that just had a far more talented roster and was far better. So the reality or the fear-mongering that is being put out there that, oh, there's going to be a caste system and the rich will only get richer and the poor will only get poorer, that's what college football has always been. It has always been a system of haves and have-nots. That's why you see so few teams competing for a national championship on a year-in, year-out level. And NIL is not going to change that. That's how the economics of this sport have always been and will always be.
So in light of Nick Saban bringing this to attention, I do feel like more college coaches are going to come out and be more candid with how they feel about this matter. And yesterday during Pro Day, our own Mike Griffith actually asked Kirby Smart that if he thought NFL draft success helped in recruiting. And Kirby said no, but NIL does. And I feel like that needs or that shifts the conversation to the things that used to matter to recruits don't matter anymore, whether it be development and NFL draft success, or even one thing that people might not think about is sometimes recruits used to ask, like, hey, I'm looking to major in this sort of program. How successful is this program at the school? I know you're giving me that smirk right now, but that's true. And those are just things that people or recruits don't care about necessarily anymore. And it's just sad to see.
I don't know if it's sad. It's the modern economics of college football. Look, the big issue with all this is that, you know, college football is a $1 billion industry now, and there's so much money out there. And you know, look, I understand people are saying, you know, fans are being asked to keep donating and donating. Look, these schools make so much money. These coaches make so much money. This is part of what you sign up for when ESPN, when Fox, when NBC, CBS are paying hundreds of millions, billions in the case of the college football playoff for the rights to this sport. So the money all trickles in and factors into it. You know, they build these massive stadiums, they build these great facilities. This is all what you sign up for when you take the money there. So they've got to find a way to deal with this and adapt to it like anyone else that money has been introduced and changed in a sport.
So how do they deal with it when it's already gotten this far?
Look, you know, that's part of the problem. And some will say the toothpaste is out of the tube. Again, I think these schools, these conferences have to come together and form, in my opinion, a coalition. Like, the NCAA has taken a hands-off approach when it comes to this, in part because they've lost every major court battle when it comes to this. And I'm not saying you put a limit on what a person can earn in those regards, but I do think you have to come together and make decisions in terms of what you want to be and what you want to be about. Because I've heard for so long these coaches saying, oh, NIL is the Wild West, and Kirby Smart's going to keep saying it, Nick Saban's going to keep saying it on College Game Day this fall. At a certain point, the leaders, Greg Sankey, the name that escapes me, the president and the commissioner of the Big Ten right now, Jim Phillips of the ACC, these guys need to come together and make a decision and make decisions on certain things if they want this sport to continue in the way that it perhaps has. But there's been so much change introduced into college football, not just NIL, the transfer portal as well of late, that it's just, as you can see, change is difficult for some people, and a lot of these coaches are struggling to live in this sort of new world and new environment that comes with it.
Well, NIL is something I imagine that we will be talking about for a long time on the Dog Nation preseason as more coaches come out, more information comes forward, and nothing gets done. All right, so we're going to move on to our last thing here. I told y'all we would come back to this topic, so I think you guys should know that, yes, I will be taking some time away next week, going on some vacation. And my vacation is going to start this weekend in the beautiful city of Savannah, Georgia, for the 200th anniversary of the St. Patrick's Day Parade. I know it's kind of hard to see on camera, but we did put Eddie in green mode in honor of St. Patrick's Day. We will see if Brandon Adams will notice that on Dog Nation Daily tomorrow, because I'm not going to change it. But I personally think that Eddie looks great in green. All right, Connor and I have very different opinions and feelings about St. Patrick's Day. So, Connor, where does this hatred for St. Patrick's Day start from?
Look, everyone is entitled to their opinion. I understand why some people love St. Patrick's Day. You know, Chicago's a great city. Savannah, it's a lot of acclaim for the way they do it there. But I'm here to tell you that St. Patrick's Day is a garbage holiday. Everyone likes to talk about drinking that specific Irish beer. It's a garbage beer. There are far better beers out there that you can enjoy. You don't need to partake in drinking just that one beer. You can enjoy many different types of beer. The famous whiskey, Irish whiskey, that people like to drink. Jimmy McNulty famously drinks a lot of it in The Wire. That is a garbage whiskey. You can drink plenty of garbage whiskeys that are even better than that. May I suggest, you know, a cinnamon tasting whiskey that you can drink year round and not just on St. Patrick's Day there. Lastly, look, my family loves St. Patrick's Day. We grew up every year eating corned beef and potatoes, and it is a truly disgusting meal. If you have to put mustard on it to try and improve it in any way, unless it's a hot dog, keep it away from me. St. Patrick's Day is a garbage holiday. I have had to hear for my entire life, oh, you know, how are the leprechauns doing out there, Connor O'Reilly? It is just the most obnoxious, nauseating day. I know people love to make it a big drinking holiday. Some people have gone on record and said it is the best drinking holiday. Quite frankly, the weather in March is disgusting. It is all over the place. It can be sunny in 80 one day and cold in 34 and raining the next day. You know, it's a far better day to enjoy a beverage, one of the many which sponsor our program, the 4th of July, when you're on a boat and it's nice and warm and sunny and you're on the water. St. Patrick's Day is a garbage holiday that was Americanized and and captured. St. Patrick was famous for driving snakes out of Ireland. There are still snakes in Ireland. If people want to eat potatoes and drink their crummy beer, go ahead and do it. Just stay away from me. Don't pinch me. Don't patronize me for trying not to wear green on a specific day. Don't make fun of my last name because it is Irish. I am of Irish descent. Don't talk about being a proud Irish American or things like that. It is a garbage holiday. I, on the other hand, will be very much looking forward to March Madness and all that comes with that, because that actually brings me joy, other than people, you know, talking about it, this garbage holiday that is St. Patrick's Day.
I think that you're missing the overall essence of what St. Patrick's Day is supposed to capture. Yes, it is a famous drinking holiday. No, that is not. It's the joy that it brings people. How this is such like a minute holiday in the scale of American holidays, but everyone celebrates St. Patrick's Day. There's no drama. You're not going to go home and fight with your family on St. Patrick's Day. It's all about the vibes. You brought up the word vibes last weekend. That is what St. Patrick's Day is all about. It's the vibes and connecting with people that you would never otherwise meet in any sort of setting, and everybody's just in a good mood, having a good time. It is a feel-good holiday.
It is not a feel-good holiday.
It might not make you feel good, but it is a feel-good holiday.
Look, if you've got people going up and trying to pinch you, I don't think that's good for the vibes. If you're trying to eat,
holding you accountable. There is a big difference.
We're not wearing green. Are you kidding me? Oh my God, grow up. We're not eight anymore.
I mean, if you aren't wearing red, white, and blue on July 4th, I feel like I would probably have the right to pinch you. I don't see why the same rules don't apply here.
Disagree there. Look, if you're entitled to celebrate St. Patrick's Day any way you want, but for a holiday that has largely become about getting blackout drunk and drinking as much as you can, there are better ways to spend that Sunday. And if St. Patrick's Day is one of your favorite holidays, I have no issue with that. I just happen to think it's a garbage holiday, and I will be enjoying Sunday in a far different way, wearing a far different color than green.
Well, we can agree to disagree, and I will be thinking of you when I'm drinking green beer and having a good time, and you're probably sitting at home on Sunday miserable. You will be the first person on my line, Connor.
I won't be miserable. I'll be having a great time watching college basketball, filling out my March Madness bracket. It'll be a grand old time on Sunday.
Okay, well, regardless of what you're doing, I know I will be having a grand time in Dog Nation. I will miss you next week while I'm out on vacation, but we will be back 2 Thursdays from now. I'm sure that we are going to have lots to cover. So Dog Nation, thank you so much for joining us on this Dog Nation preseason. Don't forget, we will see you in 2 weeks, but make sure to check out all of our spring position previews on YouTube so you can keep up with all the action. Have a very happy St. Patrick's Day, Dog Nation.